Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Olive, poor thing, sits and thinks that it's drab. Sure does. Sits and sits and sits and sits and thinks about its olive drab drab. Doesn't know that it is about to be named color of the year by those with a nose for the new, by the passionate few. Yeah. Olive is definitely in. Everything that can possibly mean anything, anywhere, at least for a year, has got to be olive. Did you hear that, Olive? Did you? Know what it means? Oh, olive. There'll be olive cars and olive trucks and olive chickens and olive ducks and olive socks and olive garters and olive brakes and olive starters. Olive sorry, olive please, olive whatnots and olive trees. Olive trees. What a quaint notion. Olive trees.
Imagine. Olive trees. It's just one of the many amazing things that came out of the mind of the man who is nice enough to stay up late and join us, the incredible Ken Nordine. Ken, how are you?
I'm feeling great. Good to be on the air with you.
Nice to talk to you, and happy birthday, Ken Nordine.
Hi, Johnny.
Hi.
I was listening to hear the story how you met and got together. It was a fascinating story.
Oh, thank you. Now, you and Burl have been married how many years?
Gosh, we were, I hate to say it. People don't believe it. I don't believe it. 65 years is coming July.
Oh, bless your hearts.
That patient, wonderful woman.
Now, if you don't mind, could we start there and talk a little bit? Did you guys meet in the business, quote unquote?
Very much like you did. Only I was just getting started. I was working on an FM station that CBS had in the basement of the Wrigley Building. And upstairs, where the real action was, they had live shows, and there was this beautiful girl who looked even more beautiful than Katharine Hepburn.
Mm.
And I saw her, and she did live shows. People would come there, and each week she would wear a different gown. They dressed up for radio shows back in those days, and they had the fellows wore tuxedos, and the women wore, the leading ladies wore beautiful dresses, a different one each week, and there was an audience. And I looked at this in wonderment, and I wondered if I could ever meet her. And I saw her face in a talent book that Leonard Dubkin put out, and it had her phone number. And I kept calling until finally she finally said, okay, I'll have a Coca-Cola with you. You know, she was a very busy and I was down in the basement. Well, I'm telling you that was the beginning of a relationship with the most wonderful woman in the world. As far as I'm concerned, it was the luck of the draw, because I could have just as easily made some terrible mistake and had been divorced and all sorts of things. But nothing like that happened. She's been a wonderful patient and good and nutritionist.
And the mother of your three sons, too.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And she has a quality that I love. She loves other people, and she listens very carefully. So she has many, many, many friends that from way back, It's delightful.
How long was it into your dating that you said, yeah, this is the one, got to pop the question?
It was almost immediate. We 3 months after I met her, and we had our Coca-Cola together at O'Donnell's on Rush Street. 3 months after, we got married. And I bought a suit, $30 suit. Mm. And she had a gold suit. She looked beautiful in clothes. And I saw her in one of the performances at First Night or thing wearing a gold lame. And my running joke now is, where's the gold lame? Let's wear that tonight.
Oh.
Even though I don't know where it is.
Uh-huh. But you have such a strong memory. That's wonderful. And your family had moved from Iowa to Chicago. Why did they pick up and move from a little town in Iowa?
Well, that's where my mother and father got married, and they both came from Sweden on separate. She was 16 and he was 17 on separate ships that crossed the Atlantic, and they met in Cherokee, Iowa, and got married, and he built a house. And I would have had an older brother, but when I was born, he was about 2, and he was playing in this 1919 Ford touring car, and the kids were playing, and he fell or whatever out of the car, and unattended, and he hit the curb with his head, and he was dead.
Oh, dear.
Well, it was such a shock to my mother and to me. You know, I saw pictures of it later.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it was a shock to me, because I was just a baby, but I think I could sense, I don't know why it was.
The grief.
Yeah, you know, that mm-hmm. my mother, she almost, she blamed herself because mm-hmm. she was with me, I think, you mm-hmm. know. So in a strange way, I became the firstborn, and because Vernon was gone. So she said to my dad, we have to leave this town. She forced him to come to Chicago.
Oh.
And he came here, and he got work here, and then she followed him after he got set, and that's the only way I would have been here. I could have been in Iowa. You know, Cherokee, Iowa is a funny town. It's one of the few little small towns that has a full symphony orchestra.
Oh, really?
It's very, very strange.
Uh-huh. Well, you went to Lane Tech High School in Chicago,
yep.
So I suspect your family then moved into or pretty close to the Swedish community in Chicago, up around Andersonville.
They sure did.
Mm-hmm. My old neighborhood.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, they were both Swedish, one from Alingsås and the other from Umeå. My mother was almost born up near the ice, Lapland, way mm-hmm. up north. And so they... But she was very smart and about real estate. And my father was an architect and builder. And I remember we had tough times. There was a depression that when I was about 9, because that was 1929 that mm-hmm. it began, the Great Depression. And I'll never forget the day my father came dancing home after he got a job to work to build the 1933 World's Fair on the lakefront.
Oh.
And he was a carpenter as well as an architect. He did everything like that. So uh-huh. he became a foreman to build the agricultural building and the dairy building, all the special buildings that they put up for the 1933 World's Fair. Oh, I remember how happy they were. Because getting work then was... Oh,
it's huge, sure.
Yeah.
Well, what was puberty like for Ken Nordin? I know that's probably a crazy question, but I always think of boys going through the voice is cracking and you sound like you're 12, but you're actually, you know, verging on becoming a man. When did that voice start happening?
You know, I don't know why the voice drops, but puberty did. My voice dropped,
And I mean, like that? You just
one day it cracked, and then before I could know it, I was a different sounding person.
Wow!
And my mother would say, "You have such a beautiful voice."
So, how old were you when your voice got that deep?
I think I was somewhere on 13 or 14. You know, that happens about that time.
Yeah.
So did you start calling into school and saying, "I'm sorry, Ken won't be in school tomorrow"?
No. They were very strict, my mother and father. I had to be on school on time. And But I did use my voice to call up girls, you know, and they'd say, "You have a nice voice. You should be in radio."
Uh-huh.
And, you think so? Well, that's actually, it put it in my mind to do something like that.
One of my favorite descriptions of Ken Nordine's voice was a writer for Salon Magazine said, "You'll find a handful of charcoal, a dollop of urban 3 a.m., the subsonics of Poe's Telltale Heart, Tom Waits's bass growl buff shined with diamond dust and a pinch of Nordinium, the rarest of all the hip and heavy elements." I said,
oh my
yes!
Gosh, that's beautiful.
It is! And it really
I'm blushing now. My ears are really blushing.
Well, it explains it because, as the writer says, you know, just saying that your voice is deep and dark and rich is just so anemic.
Do you know that Tom Waits is a good friend?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I got to meet him several years ago. In fact, I'm working on a little book called Maybe the Moments that's been a work in progress, and I asked him if I could use something that he wrote as a sort of a preface for the thing to explain what it. And I could read a little bit of it for you if you want to.
That would be wonderful.
I'm going to ask, can you hold that? Because we're going to have to break.
This would be like a classic radio cliffhanger, Ken. No one will turn off their radios now because
they shouldn't, because Tom Waits is a very charismatic person and writer.
Wonderful. Okay, we're talking with Ken Nordine and taking a little trip down memory lane, celebrating a 90th birthday with Ken Nordine. And yes, stick around. You're going to be hearing really what he's known for, the voice.
Steve and Johnny, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
We are very fortunate to be wishing a happy 90th birthday to and be joined by the broadcast legend that is Ken Nordine.
And talking with Ken, you never know who we're going to find out that he's friends with and has worked with. I'm not real surprised because when we stumbled under the name Tom Waits, Tom Waits has said in the past that really much of his style was inspired by Ken's word jazz. Right, Ken?
Yeah, I met Tom through Jerry Garcia. I had a call back in 1933 from Dan Healy, the producer for Jerry, mixer. And they asked me to go out there. And through him, I did a concert with him and became friends with him. But through him, I met not only Tom Waits, but some wonderful people out there that were so kind to us. We had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
We did a concert at the Coliseum. It's amazing, some of the people I've met over my long years here.
Mm-hmm.
I did a concert for David Bowie in New York about a year and a half ago, which was great fun.
Oh, yeah.
But Tom wrote a preface for me. I'll read a little part of it. Is that nowadays there is a deficit of wonder, but nobody can wonder quite like, you know, if you use my name, Nordine. Mm-hmm. He's always wondering about, like a spider building a web inside a violin, which I thought was a lovely line.
Mm-hmm.
We did a couple of things together on the Devout Catalyst that we recorded out there in San Rafael, in was the Jerry Garcia studio, the Grateful Dead studio. There was the most beautiful collection of equipment that you've ever seen. Neve consoles. I sometimes wonder what happened to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did something with him here with Jerry in Chicago, a very interesting thing. I got a fellow named Santucci, Michael Santucci, who is an audiologist who makes a hearing thing. I had him take molds of all the ears of all the Grateful Dead players, Jerry and Mickey and Paul, all of them. Mm-hmm. And so they had inner earphones for the first time, which left out the squealing sound that you sometimes get when you pump up the monitors.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that.
it was fabulous. It became a big business for Santucci. He makes them for everybody now.
Wow.
It was, he made one for me, and I often wonder, I can see somewhere on a dusty shelf, Jerry Garcia's inner earphones.
His ear mold.
Yeah.
It'll be on eBay before we know it, Ken.
Well, they were a marvelous group, there's no question.
Yeah.
My darling granddaughter, Katie, put my name on Facebook, and I swear that every deadhead from all over the United States, sends me not only happy birthday, but they want me to come and hear this concert mm-hmm. They have all kinds of spinoffs, and I think that the deadheads are looking for Jerry to come back.
Mm, yeah. Mm.
Well, speaking of groups, I have to read you a text that we were just sent. And this comes from Jeff, who says, Mr. Dardenne graced our second album with a track called Nothing's Boy.
That's right.
Thank you, Ken. And that's Jeff from H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, they did that at the Chess Studios here in Chicago. They were quite a group. The Nothing's Boy now climbs the spirals of his light. His heretic tick-tock muscle measures in its closed circle. His blood's on free-flowing. Up so bring him down to the clouds of zero. And they used it as a bridging device.
I have visions of Jeff just now driving off the road. Does it ever surprise you that you have this incredible recall? Or is it a case of I often tease Steve because he collects records and he knows all of this crazy minutia about the flip sides of records and such. And I said, but honey, you don't know what you ate for dinner yesterday. I mean, have you just decided that these are the important things and, matching socks, not so important?
Yeah, I wish all socks were the same color.
Yes.
It would be great if they were. Memory is something that I don't understand. Whatever it is, it's some strange encryption that goes on inside your head. And, of course, you remember some things, for a painful or frightening moment in your life, but a lot of things are stored away, and something will happen, and then it'll trigger your doing it. Of course, I practiced memorizing a lot when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
How did you practice?
I would read and read and read the thing over and over again until I had it fixated. Years ago, when I did the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, we did it for a while from the Tribune studio there on Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I had to memorize not only the commercials for the Chicago Title Trust Company, but the introductions to the various pieces in the orchestra. Well, my mind was like a sponge then. I didn't use a teleprompter or the cheat sheets or the idiot cards.
No cards, nothing.
No cards.
Why?
Well, that's just the way it was.
They wanted it to look good?
They wanted to look as if I knew what I was saying without looking and reading it.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes that was difficult because they would change the order sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, you memorize things in sequence. one thing triggers another. That's why for my 90th birthday, I had to remember certain things, so I did a thing that I did a long time ago called Don't You Wish You Could Be Something Else, you know. Don't you wish you could be something other than you are? You could maybe feel the falling fall inside a falling star. And then I'd remember the whole thing, and it would trigger, each line would trigger whatever the next one, line was, because it had a kind of sequential logic and necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd rather be some, well, I don't want to.
Oh. I'm all of a sudden I'm inside a star.
It's amazing what the mind can do with and it happens in dreams.
Yeah.
And of course, memorization. I can't remember a lot of things because of the blur of yesterday. You know, do you remember what you had to eat 2 weeks ago on a Thursday afternoon or something? No, I don't.
Not so important.
Food. I had food. That's what I
That's right. Well, when you were in here with us a few years back, in fact, we have to thank Howard Levy for actually introducing you to us.
Yeah, he is a fabulous
He really is. He's a treasure, too.
And he is.
You came into the studio and spent a couple of hours with us, and I remember because of the time of day we're on the radio, we started talking about that state that you get into when you're not quite asleep, but you're not really awake.
Yeah.
And you talked about, really, how you're very creative during that time, aren't you?
Yeah, your mind is clear, and you're in a special kind of concentration. It's very free form that goes on in your mind. And dreams, of course, are strange in that the wonderful way you can go from one illogical something into another, and it seems perfectly natural. And the way they fade away, too, is a...
Well, would you credit some of your career to your ability to hold on to that dream state, that pre-dream state, and remember some of those ideas, and then use them creatively?
Well, that's actually how this little book that I'm working on, that I told you, called Maybe the Moment, because what it is, I go to bed and I used to have insomnia of a sort, and I'd start with the first line, Maybe the Moment, always the same, and then I think I'd rhyme lines, so I had eight lines long. I'd start out, Maybe the Moment has something to do. Okay, that's okay. Maybe the Moment has something to do. And I think of with what's going on in Kalamazoo. There we go. Maybe the Moment has something to do with what's going on in Kalamazoo. Each line has five beats. Maybe the moment is five beats, and something to do five beats in Kalamazoo. Well, that's great. Now how will I end it? I have four more lines to do. Moment is something to do. People are leaving. The town is in shock. Where are they going? To Manitowoc. So then I recited again to myself, Maybe the moment has something to do with what's going on in Kalamazoo. People are leaving. The town is in shock. Where are they going? To Manitowoc. Now, believe it or not, the Indian phrases, that's what I was thinking of. But that little poem was published on a full page in a Swedish magazine, and it was the only English in the entire Swedish magazine. And what I had is the illustration is the Earth as seen from the moon, the crater of the moon, the shots that NASA has sent us. So you see the craters of the moon, and off in the distance, the Earth is setting. The lovely color of the Earth is a small ball off in the distance. And superimposed of that is this hang-up on where somebody went from one part of Michigan in, with a little Indian town mm-hmm. named Kalamazoo to another one, Manitowoc.
I suspect that Ken Nordine sleeps like a baby.
After I finish it, I drop off like a log in a sawmill.
I love that.
But it there's so many. I have 100 of these things.
Uh-huh.
A 100. I have, for example, I'll give you one quick one. Maybe the moment is thinking a thought that came to you from a book that you bought concerning a cage in search of a bird, written by Kafka, who loved the absurd. When I finish that, turn off the, write it down on the nightstand, go to sleep, and there it is in the morning.
So you truly are proof that if you don't use it, you lose it. And the mind is a muscle, and I mean, you're using it.
I think
it.
You're right. That's what it is, Johnny. There's no... a good thing to do is to have projects that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
When I see people, you know, that get old at 60,
mm-hmm.
I used to think that 60 was very old.
Mm-hmm.
But now at 90, I'm thinking, well, gee, there's a lot of things I would like, still like to do. And I plan ahead to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to embarrass you, Ken, but you are such an inspiration, not only creatively, but as you say, there are people who they get to be 50, 60 or whatever and say, well, okay, I'm over the hill. But the fact that you at 90 are just as creative, maybe more
so
than
I
you
think.
Were when you yeah. were in your 20s, 30s, whatever.
Yeah, you find yourself able to focus with a little more ease, without any panic of getting there. There's some of the hurry is gone. You don't rush around as much. But it is a marvelous gift, the imagination. And with the computers that we have today, you have at your hands music programs that you can use, graphic mm-hmm. programs. I have about 19 or 18 different things on YouTube. And one of them is an excerpt from maybe the moment
mm-hmm.
that's done there. But all sorts of little word jazz things. I have some of the colors on there. And the comments that you get from people, not only in the United States, but from London, and Melbourne, Australia, it's all over the place that people use the computer. It is the greatest democratization of art that I have ever seen.
In fact, we should do a blatant plug for your website, and people can find your website
yeah,
by
just
going
search
to
for me. Just Ken Nordine, and they're on YouTube, and you'll see a list of little things.
And your website is wordjazz.com, and if anybody forgets that, we've got a link right from our page at WGN. And I love just wandering around your website. And it's kind of like you get to wordjazz.com, and it's like, buckle up, because you're going to peek inside Ken Nordine's brain
mm-hmm.
yeah,
and see all the stuff that's going on there.
But I also enjoy going to sites where people are responding to the work that you've done. He helped me make it through college, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning. Or
there's many comments like that on YouTube and on YouTube as well as Facebook.
I've always thought, though, Ken, that I think whatever age a person is when they've been exposed to Ken Nordine and what you do, we get it. You've got the voice. God gave you the gift of the voice, and it is a God-given gift, in my opinion. And he gave you this incredible imagination, but he also gave you something that I don't think anyone can learn. You have to be born cool. And I think you just have that coolness factor that people respond to. They get it. We understand that you are cooler than the rest of the kids in the classroom.
And we don't mind.
That's right. It's okay.
Well, I don't know how. I think I'm more like a nice ice cube.
Well, you know, speaking of ice cubes, there's a brilliant piece that... back to Tom Waits for a moment. He said in talking about Ken Nordine, he said, "You are the light in the icebox."
Yeah,
I thought, wow.
Is it on or is it off?
Yeah.
I think that Tom Waits is one of the real big talents in our country, and he has a great following. He's done some marvelous things.
I think you've helped him, though.
Just a little bit.
Yes.
He's helped me. We did a dialogue in which we were astrologists who were hiding out because the astronomers were trying to get rid of us.
Oh.
And we were taking instructions in other signs and hiding out.
That's brilliant. Now, when you work with someone like a Waits or a David Bowie or a Laurie Anderson, do you two sit down and you write out what you're going to do, or is it let's go with the moment, let's go with our creativity and see where it takes us?
I think the best ad-libs are written.
Wow.
In many ways, when you're working when you're reading, mm-hmm. you have to make it sound like you're not reading.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a special kind of writing that's not writerly, but that's more like you speak.
Mm-hmm.
And to learn the flow of the rhythm of that is the best thing. You know, really, when you think about it, we're all ad-libbing all the time. All conversation is ad-lib, and it's based upon reaction to what someone says, and all the varying inflections that we use, the amazing that lifts the language out of just some icon on a page, the number of ways you can inflect the word oh, there's so many, and it's music. I think of language as music.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's something we've never talked about. How do you feel about the way language is abused these days? Do you see it as being creative when, you know, grammatically it's not right?
What they do, they get a hook, as it were,
mm-hmm.
and they beat it to death. They just find one little phrase,
mm-hmm.
and it's repeated, and it becomes a almost like prison music in a way. It's a gotta do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gotta do it. Well, what else is new?
You could teach a rapper a thing or two.
it's sad.
Yeah,
it's sad because it's a dumbing down, is what it is. And and then there's such a love of being in the flashy spotlight, you know, that it becomes a little stretched,
mm-hmm.
and not sensitive.
But given that, have you ever had the urge, because I just listening to what you just did, have you ever had the urge to do a rap album? I would love to hear a Ken Nordine word jazz rap album.
Well, a lot of the things I do are rap, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the sense of the jazz rapping,
mm-hmm.
but they're based on an idea. For example, what if you get there and nobody's there? Then let's say that's your rap, just you in the empty way up there somewhere, and you look down the distance to see if you can see how it was like where you used to be. Forever's funny, it lasts much too long. How can you be just a 4-minute song? You know, that's the type of thing that I would consider rap.
Uh-huh. That's my kind of rap.
Yeah. I'm all over this.
Yeah. Rap comes in many rappers. Let's find it. That's true.
That's right. I like that. Rap comes in many rappers. Of course, that would be a rapper with a W.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking with Ken Nordine, if this gives you the desire to hear more Ken Nordine, thank goodness for technology today. We can. He's right there at your fingertips 24/7, thanks to the computer.
Maybe the moment, the one that we're in, is time running out. We better begin before it's too late. And since I can't stay, we'll make the walk short and talk on the way. Maybe the moment, whatever it means, is under a pile of old magazines that you can reread someday when you choose to find yourself lost in used-to-be news. Or maybe the moment a paranoid crow is thinking in tongues no other birds know. What is he up to? And why in your yard raucously calling? His eye looking hard. Or maybe the moment has found a new drug. Anxiety's gone, swept under the rug. Blood becomes jolly, and sweat tells a joke. Tears laugh their heads off at mirrors of smoke. Maybe the moment will wear a disguise and come in a swarm of mutating flies in forests of rain with air fathoms deep. Hugging your pillow, you slip into sleep. Maybe the moment on luxury's lap, you sitting pretty, it's time for your nap. Grab yourself 40, and when you awake, centerfold girlies will bake you a cake. Or maybe the moment is older than God and weighs twice as much. What's even more odd, before the Big Bang began to begin, guess who invented original sin? Or maybe the moment is so far away, no one alive will be able to say, been there, done that, played golf on the moon. The resident pro said, please, come back soon. Or maybe the moment is thinking a thought that came to you from a book that you bought concerning a cage in search of a bird, written by Kafka, who loved the absurd. Maybe the moment now filling the sky is heavy with leaves some stock market guy will use as a chart for Sepia Brown, a stock he can short before it falls down. Or maybe the moment speeds off toward the moon, where alien girls in bed until noon await the return of saucer-eyed guys they know will be back to sexualize. Maybe the moment gets so ugly loud, you plug up your ears and run from the crowd. Away from the noise, you look up and see the man in the moon, smiling quietly.
Isn't that wonderful?
Maybe the moment. That's Ken Nordine, and if you're just joining us, you missed a fantastic hour, the midnight, the bewitching hour of midnight, and our celebration of Ken Nordine's 90th birthday. But we couldn't just say, good night, go to bed, Ken Nordine. We had to wind down with Ken. Wow, that was wonderful, Ken.
Thank you. You realize all those were written as a cure for insomnia.
I find myself, as I was listening to that, thinking, okay, now tomorrow, because we sleep during the day, and I lie there and I complain, it's too bright, it's too loud, the mown grass smells too green. I'm going to turn that into something more lyrical than, you know, whining. I'm going to try, at least.
I want to thank both of you, really, for having me on this special day.
Well,
and I heard the Blackhawk commercial on your... I love our Blackhawks. Burl and I go to all the games.
You do?
Rocky wrote me the loveliest letter because I used to do the Cold Steel on Ice
yes.
and the Blackhawks.
Sure.
And now, what a change. They're so marvelous. I have my fingers crossed. You know, that's a big thing to try to win the Stanley Cup.
But
if anybody can do it, I think they can.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a Blackhawks jersey?
Yes, yes. I have the number 88, so I have to get it moved now to a 90.
Of course you do. That's great.
Kaner is a phenomenal player.
Oh, yeah. And they're so young.
You have a great fan. One of the fellows that is very close to the Sonya Henny room, Wally, is a great fan of yours. He listens to you all the time. And another person that's a great fan of yours is a woman by the name of Carmen, who works at a Walgreens we go to. And every time we walk in, oh, Johnny and Steve, I heard them last night, they were talking, you know. And she is just in love with you. It's fabulous.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Well, hi, Carmen.
Hi, Carmen.
She'll flip.
We'll have to stop by that Walgreens.
Thank both of you so much.
Oh, Ken, thank you so much for you know what? Anytime you have insomnia and if you're not feeling terribly creative, you know where to find us on the radio. I want you to pick up the phone.
I think are creative. You do so many wonderful things. So in your way, really, there's a reason you've been on the air so long and are so loved by so many people.
Oh, it is very humbling to get that kind of a compliment from you.
Well, that's true.
But I can't let you go without, again, a couple blatant plugs. Your website, wordjazz.com, and on YouTube, people can find you. And also, you are still on the radio, too. Blatant plug for when people can hear you.
Yeah, I'm on midnight on Sundays, but is that opposite you?
No. Nope.
We don't come out till 2 in the morning on Sunday night.
That's right.
Good.
Yes.
Let me leave you with a short poem that's my wife's favorite. Very short. I got me this island that I'm calling me. Whenever I go there, you know who I see. You can see me and me more often than not, and that's pretty often. My favorite spot. Well, there are plenty of spots called other than me, but there's someone else's. One look and you'll see. You can try like a fool to be what you're not. The island you get is the island you got.
Thank you, Ken Nordine. And please give that beautiful Burl a hug for us.
I'll do that.
Thank you. Talk
Good night
to you soon.
For me.
Happy birthday, Ken.
Thanks.
Thank you.
He is such a special man.
And when he speaks, I literally get goosebumps. I truly do. I mean, and, you know, I've been listening to his music. His first album was in 1956.
Yeah, one of the original Word Jazz albums.
Yeah. In fact, our own Dave Schwann brought in his Word Jazz albums. And, you know, I was talking earlier about how he crosses all generations. It's so incredible now with the internet to see these websites of, you know, 20-somethings in college that are turned on to Word Jazz or Colors.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, he's the coolest.
You can listen to some of the things that Ken recorded back in the 50s, whenever, and they still sound just as hip as if they were recorded yesterday. And listen to something that he is recording now.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I absolutely will use Ken as an example for the people we occasionally hear from saying, oh, well, see, now I'm up in age because I'm older than 50 or I'm older than 60 or whatever. 90 years old, still not just as creative as he ever was, more creative
than
he ever was. And he
agrees. And it really, it seems like he's one of those rare people that feels like there's not enough hours in a day,
yeah.
Not enough time to do all the things that he wants to do. A listener at an 815 area code texted, sounds like Garrison Keillor as narrated by Johnny Cash.
Okay.
I love that.
And Ken and his wife, Burl, two of the sweetest people, and you talk about a wonderful, wonderful romance.
Mm-hmm.
The story that Ken told at the beginning of the show about he and Burl and
how
they first met.
And you can still hear that teenage boy in his voice when he talks about her. And if you missed the last hour, we'll have that up as a podcast later on this morning. It's his birthday. It's his 90th birthday. He had his birthday party over the weekend, and we weren't able to attend his birthday party, so we were just so thrilled that he could take some time and spend some of the kickoff of a new year with us on the radio.